Radio MD.
RadioMD.com.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. Here's Dr. Michael Roizen.
And this is Dr. Mike. We have a great show lined up for you today, basically because the news, the medical news of the week, is so, what I would call revolutionary, outstanding, amazing. Let me go and give you some of the insights, and then we'll go through the full roundup. When we did the top 10 innovations for next year, the Cleveland Clinic does that in, we vote on it in June and July and August. We interview 150 physicians and about 30 people in venture capital and innovation world. They all give us their suggestions. We come up with about 250 of them, the duplicates included. And we get two groups of 20 physicians, then vote for the top 10. An unusual thing happened this year. Let me tell you the criteria. The criteria are, it has to be something that changes medical care in the next year, 2016 in this case. And it has to have a major effect in clinical medicine. What was so unusual? Well, the clinic has this tremendous record of selecting things that work only once. I've been involved in it, I think, 9 years now of the 10 years we've done the top 10. And only once have we really messed up. Number one in one of the years was a procedure that was sweeping Europe. And it was, its American trials were underway. We voted for it as the number one innovation that year, renal denervation. That is taking away the nerves to the kidney as a cure for tough-to-treat hypertension. We thought maybe as many as 30% of hypertensive patients would get this minimally invasive procedure that could then cure their hypertension. We knew the studies weren't done, but they were going to be done by December or January, and we thought by January, even at the end of January, it would sweep the country that next year. So we voted at number one. It was almost outstanding and by both groups because the European data looked so good. Well, turned out when it got through with the American trials, it didn't work. That was a miss. And this year, so one of the things I'm in charge with is as being the person who moderates and kind of directs the 20 physician group at both sessions is to help challenge them. So this group selected a research technique called CRISPR. CRISPR is gene editing that's just used in the lab. And I said, look, guys, this is clinical medicine. Not. And they said, look, this is sweeping. It's only $30, and you can edit genes. They said, this is going to change our knowledge of stuff, our using animal models of disease, so that it will make a major challenge. I kept challenging them, but they kept up. And it got to be one of the top four innovations for the next year. I called my son. I said, Jeff, he's a pediatric endocrinologist at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. And I said, Jeff, how can this research tool, one, I said, do you even use it? It's a research tool in basic science. Are you using it? And he said, yeah, we're using it all the time to change animal models of disease. And I said, do you think it has a chance of making a major? He said, Dad, it's obvious. It'll do it. Well, I didn't think it would. But man, you look at the headlines yesterday in the New York Times, the Washington Post, it has already changed the world. And from an ethical standpoint, it will keep changing the world. What do I mean by that? Well, I've got to read you some of this story that we'll talk about this gene therapy group, and we'll get to that because this is changing the life. It's about how a child in London, yeah, one kid in London is going to change the world. But before we do that, let's talk about the lineup for today's story, because I've got to tell you how gene therapy will change and how gene editing will change. At $30 a treatment, everyone will be able to do it. And we'll be able to maybe radically change how many people have Alzheimer's disease or heart disease or cancer in the United States. It's just going to be radically changed. But before we do that, again, I want to talk to you. Our guest at the bottom of the hour, Dr. James Forrester, a father of medicine on the West Coast, and his book, The Heart Healers. Let me read you part of that. I'm going to read right from the book and his statement. It's quoting Steve Jobs. Here's to the crazy ones, the misfits, the rebels, the troublemakers, the round pegs in the square holes, the ones who see things differently. They're not fond of rules, and they have no respect for the status quo. You can quote them, disagree with them, glorify them, or vilify them. About the only thing you can't do is ignore them, because they change things. They push the human race forward. And while some may see them as the crazy ones, we see genius, because these people are crazy enough to think they can change the world are the ones who do it. Let me introduce you a few of the misquits, Dr. Forster goes on in this book, The Heart Healers. A bullheaded battlefield surgeon named Dwight Harkin. Along the way, we'll meet cantankerous heart surgeon Charles Bailey, scandalously outspoken cardiologist, I should say, from the Cleveland Clinic, Mason Soans, utopian maverick and Argentinian surgeon again from the Cleveland Clinic, Rene Favolaro, life of any party, Andreas Grunzig, establishment challenging Japanese biochemist Akika Endo. I suspect most readers will not recognize a single name. But today, if a family member, friend, or you have experienced a relief or been cured of heart disease, these men stand unseen behind the doctor responsible for the cure. And I've got to tell you that this book by James Forster, for anyone interested in medicine, and all of us should be, 60% of us will have a heart attack or a stroke, all of us should be. James Forster's book is outstanding. We'll talk to James Forster at the bottom of the hour in talking about, and I'm going to pick some. You can email me. Well, actually, you can't email me because my email system isn't working today. Once again, I've failed it. But you can email, you can call us at 844-305-7800, 844-305-7800, and talk to me about it. The Heart Healers, a wonderful book. But I really wanted to talk about two things in the study that we'll talk about. The first, statins, the first is not statins. The one that I want to talk really about is that the middle-aged, less educated white men are dying faster. Is it suicide? What are the five causes? And we'll come back to it. We'll also start with something simple. Excuse me. Something simple. Statins dampen the response to flu vaccine. What to do if you're taking a statin? We'll also talk about PPIs, protein pump inhibitors, and kidney damage. Most of us, I guess 6 or 10 million of us, take these every day for preventing heartburn and heartburn-related illnesses. There's some guy who's a comedian who even talks about it and grabs some chili, I think, on or hot dogs or something on it. It's not a joking matter. We'll find out why as we go through today. How much does severe obesity cost California? About $9 billion. And is that an underestimate? We'll talk about that. Just avoid them? Could antibiotics make your child gain weight? Maybe. We'll talk about it. Do restaurant menu calorie counts change the way we eat? And will we get to the final point, getting brain stimulation to limit calorie consumption? As I said, we hope to get those in the first half hour. We won't get them all, but we'll get some of them. Then we'll get to Dr. James Forster. He has written this wonderful book, The Heart Healers. It's compelling. You almost want, as a physician, you want to read it constantly. In the second hour, we have 2 hours. Some stations only carry 1 hour, some only the second hour. You can always get them if you're out of service area for your radio. Go back by the end of the day today. You can go, usually by, I think, 7 p.m. You can go to the podcast at radiomd.com. Get to the podcast. What's P53 got to do with aging? And why survival of a baby in London means a lot to your rate of aging? We'll be back in just a second on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
Packing for a trip? I know that many travelers like you wish there were more options to stay healthier and happier away from home. Enter Even Hotels with a wellness-savvy staff, a best-in-class fitness experience, healthier food choices, and natural, relaxing spaces. There's no excuse to miss your workout there with fitness options for core, cardio, and strength from their best-in-class athletic studio to the in-room training zone. Eat well while on the road with an abundance of simple, natural, good choices, including customized menu items, freshly prepared food for specific diets, and healthy grab-and-go items. Enjoy premium amenities to wash away the stresses. And finally, at the end of every day, you can rest easy on their premium sleep system that features natural eucalyptus linens and pillow choices to accommodate every type of sleeper. If you can't stay with them at one of their locations, enjoy helpful tips from their wellness travel site, wellwellwell.com. Discover Even Hotels.
I'm here to tell you that Shelton's chickens and turkeys don't do drugs. Now, what does that mean? They're raised without the use of antibiotics or artificial growth stimulants. They're even allowed to walk around in the open space and sunshine, free to scratch at the ground and peck away at whatever takes their fancy. All of Shelton's natural poultry products are made with the finest natural ingredients available. They use no preservatives, flavor enhancers, modified starches, animal protein, or any artificial ingredients. In fact, their ingredient list reads more like home recipes instead of chemistry textbooks. From premium whole turkeys and chickens to chicken breasts and thighs, ground turkey, uncured chicken, Frank's canned chicken and chili, turkey burgers and meatballs, and the absolute best turkey jerky and sticks on the planet, Shelton's is your go-to poultry brand. If you want certified organic, you can have that too. Look for the Shelton's brand in your natural markets, or to search for one near you, go to Shelton's.com. Shelton's premium poultry is so good, your family will taste the healthy difference.
Breast cancer is the second leading cause of cancer deaths among women in the United States. Better screening and treatment have contributed to a decline in breast cancer deaths. However, not all women have benefited equally from these improvements. Black women have the highest death rate from breast cancer compared to any other racial or ethnic group. We can all help reduce deaths from breast cancer. Healthcare professionals can ensure that women get the tests and treatment they need on time. Patient navigators can help guide women through the healthcare system so they get the care they need. Women need to educate themselves about breast cancer and talk to their healthcare provider about how to reduce their risk. The full benefit of breast cancer screening is achieved when every woman receives adequate screening, timely follow-up, and high-quality treatment. Learn more at www.cdc.gov/vital signs.
Confessions of a Potentially Perfect Parent, brought to you by AdoptUsKids.org.
Okay, here goes. I know more about cooking dinner for a party of 12 than I do about packing a lunch for a 12-year-old. I know kids like things like PB&J, pigs in a blanket. Oh, and fish sticks. They do love fish sticks. Fillets I get, but sticks? What part of the fish does the stick come from? I know I can read a cookbook that'll tell me how to make a red wine reduction, but where are the cookbooks that can teach me how to cut the crusts off bologna sandwiches? Oh, maybe we can compromise on mac and cheese. Can you make that with brie? Everybody likes brie, right?
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to push your food around their plate. Call 1-888-200-4005 or visit AdoptUsKids.org for more information. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
Don't miss a minute. Listen at your leisure, always online and on demand at RadioMD.com. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Michael Roizen, MD.
And this is Dr. Mike. Let me go over some quick hitters. That is things you should do. That's what this show does. It takes what information comes out that week and helps you understand how to change what you do. So this is a question we got this week from Greg C., University Heights, Ohio. I just read the flu vaccine doesn't work as well for folks who take statins. I've been taking a low-dose statin for years. What should I do differently? Well, Greg, yes, the results of a couple of recent studies reveal that this might be the case for people, especially over age 65. And it reinforces the need for us older folks, especially those who take statins, to make sure we get the high-dose flu vaccine that's available for seniors. First, let's look at the studies and see why getting age-appropriate vaccine is so important. The first study looked at 7,000 people over the age of 65 in the U.S., Colombia, Panama, the Philippines, and looked at levels of influenza antibodies in people who got the vaccine compared to those who didn't. They found the statin users had fewer influenza antibodies, indicating a lower immune response to the vaccine. They looked at 9 flu seasons and concluded the effectiveness of the flu vaccine in older people is compromised further by the use of statins. So what does this mean for you, Greg? Number one, don't ever stop taking or reducing your statin dose without your doctor's permission. Statins are lifesavers, but when you stop them suddenly, you get a rebound in heart attacks and strokes. So don't stop them suddenly. Talk to your doctor before you do. And when you get the flu shot, it might be the smart move to get your titers afterwards for the influenza antibodies. Ask your doc. We don't know yet, but we will shortly over this flu season. In any case, whether you're over 65 or not, if you're taking a statin, get the high dose flu trivalent vaccine. Let me repeat that. Get the high-dose flu trivalent vaccine. It's powerful protection against 3 strains. And maybe next year, the high-dose vaccine will be against all 4 of the strains that we give the rest of the population. But for today, get the high-dose vaccine if you're taking a statin. Now, there was another story, and that is PPIs. And we can say this, it took a long time for this study to come. Since the 1990s, protein pump inhibitors have been a favored treatment for GERD, gastroesophageal reflux disease, and even simple acid reflux. They suppress stomach acid up to 3 days per dose and were thought to have minimal side effects while preventing the potential catastrophe of esophageal cancer. But 2 recent studies came out this week that we were asked about that are changing that conclusion. The first study from Hopkins tracked 10,000 adults with normal kidney function for 15 years. It found that PPI users were about 35% more likely to develop chronic kidney disease than non-users. The second study came out of SUNY Buffalo, which tracked over 240,000 people for 17 years. It had similar results. Both studies also reported that people who used an alternative, an H2 blocker, lasts only 12 hours, didn't increase their risk. So, cases of chronic kidney disease are on the rise. 31 million Americans, 10% of all of us, develop some form of kidney disease, kidney dysfunction chronically. Much of that is probably due to the increase in red meat we've been consuming for the last 50 years, but some due to the PPIs. So, what should you do? At most, take a protein pump inhibitor for 2 weeks. For everyone else, switch to cimetidine or one of the acid-blocking histamine receptors, H2 blockers, and talk to your doc about it. That's the way to do it. Of course, the right way to do it is to lose enough weight so most of us don't have GERD, since most of us GERD, gastroesophageal reflux disease, relates to weight. Let me go and talk about middle-aged white guys dying too fast and tease you a little bit, talk to you a little bit about gene editing. The body does some form of gene editing itself when it gets a cancer. What do I mean by that? The cancer puts out a substance, a protein, that inhibits your P53 gene, which is a proofreader gene. If you have an error in your letters, your proofreader gene sees that and should kill the cancer, the rogue cells, before they get a chance to get mighty. But some of them, these cancer rogue cells put out this protein that inhibits your ability to fight them. Well, what happens if you could shove into your genes more of the P53 so much that it overwhelmed the cancer and could kill it? Well, that's just one type of gene editing. And what happens if you've got an ApoE4 that leads to premature development of Alzheimer's? You cut that out, so all you have is the E3 varieties, and you prevent Alzheimer's in a large percentage of the population. That's what gene editing might do. And does it work? Well, Layla, a one-year-old girl with leukemia, is in remission thanks to gene editing technology that allowed her to receive modified immune cells from another person in the Ormond Street Clinic in London. And in the second hour, we're going to talk about the ethics of gene editing and how cheap it has become. $30. That's right. For $30, maybe you can edit out the genes you don't want. Wow, that's a real change. But let me first talk about, and by the way, just like you edit out, you got to edit in. You can edit in more of these P53s. And we'll talk about that importance. This really changes everything. That's what I talked about in the first 15-minute segment. Remember, we voted this research technique. The Cleveland Clinic physicians voted CRISPR, a gene editing technology only used in the lab until this week. We voted it as one of our top 10 innovations for clinical care for the year 2016. So the physicians at the Cleveland Clinic Care think that this technology of gene editing will change care in a major way, in 2016. So we'll talk about that a little bit later. But 500,000 people are dead who shouldn't be dead. Angus Deaton, the 2015 Nobel Laureate in Economics, wrote. Deaton, an economics professor at Princeton, was talking about the stunning finding that he and his wife Ann Case made while analyzing U.S. death data from the past few decades. The researchers found the mortality rate for white men and women aged 45 to 54 with less than a college education took a sharp turn upward in 1999, a disconcerting reversal that's been virtually unheard of in other countries. To put that number of 500,000 in perspective, that's 40 times the Ebola deaths. You're getting up there with HIV and AIDS. The couple study, which was published this week in the proceeding of the National Academy of Science, offered a number of possible reasons that this might be happening. And other experts have weighed in, one of which is the psychological distress the traditional causes of financial problems are having. Another one was the nation's opiate epidemic. Another one, alcohol poisoning. The end of the American dream and the breakdown of family support networks. We'll get to all of those, not in this next half hour, but in the second hour. But this next half hour, what's coming up? Well, we've got a real treat for you. The Heart Healers with James Forrester, F-O-R-R-E-S-T-E-R. A great book. Literally, I don't know, my producer's been selecting just magnificent books lately, but this is a great book on the misfits that have changed medicine. We'll be right back on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. James Forrester, The Heart Healers.
Being your best means nothing slows you down, whether it's a hard day of chores around the house, that weekend marathon, or smashing through a workout. One thing remains the same. Recovery must occur before you can be your best. Michael's Recovery Zyme supports the body's natural inflammatory response, resulting in greater muscle recovery. Recovery Zymes is the missing link you need to be your best. Recovery Zymes' formulation of systemic enzymes and herbs, coupled with an advanced enteric coating, allows Recovery Zymes attempts to work where needed, the muscles and tissues. Our team at Michaels also uses these formulations, so we price our products to be cost-effective because we believe that excellent health should be affordable. Recovery Zymes is the highest potency and most affordable muscle recovery formulation in the market. Elite athletes and weekend warriors all agree. Systemic enzymes are the missing link. Michaels Recovery Zymes provides them so you can move forward and achieve your goals. You provide the passion, we'll provide the support.
Every 39 seconds, an adult dies from a heart attack, stroke, or related disease. These conditions claim the lives of more than 800,000 adults each year and are largely preventable. Two leading risks for heart disease and stroke are high blood pressure and high cholesterol, serious conditions that often have no symptoms. 68 million adults have high blood pressure, and 71 million have high cholesterol. Here's what you can do to reduce your risk. Take your prescription medications to control blood pressure or cholesterol. Eat a healthy diet that's low in salt, fat, and cholesterol, and full of fresh fruits and vegetables. Take a brisk 10-minute walk, 3 times a day, 5 days a week. Don't smoke. If you do, quit now. While you've been listening, one person has died from heart disease or stroke. You don't have to be next. Learn more about how to keep your heart healthy at www.cdc.gov/heartdisease.
Radio MD.
Melanie Cole's Health Radio.
What does the word organic really mean?
So organic really means there's a lot of human labor put into the food that you're consuming. So it could mean there's no pesticides that are applied to seeds and to plants. There's no antibiotics or growth hormones, that are being used in animal products. And it also, in most cases, means that there's no GMO seed that's being used.
Become a healthier you 5 days a week.
What's GMO? What does non-GMO mean?
Okay, so GMO, this is a good one. So GMO stands for genetically modified organisms. So the question is whether or not a seed or a plant has some genetically modified gene in it.
It's health delivered daily. Listen live every Monday through Friday at noon Eastern on RadioMD.com, iHeartRadio, or the free TuneIn Radio app.
Today, you brushed your teeth. You skipped the floss. You combed your hair. You took the train. You did the crossword. You missed 22 across. You went to work. You had a meeting. You ate your lunch. You had another meeting. You wondered, how is anyone supposed to get any work done around here with so many meetings? You left the office. You took the train. You ate your dinner. You brushed your teeth. You did all the things that one normally does the day before a brutal EF5 tornado rips through town, leaving 30,000 people without power. You never know when the day before is the day before. Prepare for tomorrow at ready.gov/today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
RadioMD.com. It's your life, your health, it's your show. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, starring Dr. Michael Royson, MD.
And this is Dr. Mike, and we're really privileged to talk to James Forrester, who's written you get involved in books. I read one of these every week. I try and read at least half of the book. And this one is so exciting, you can't put it down. It's James Forrester's book, The Heart Healers, The Misfits, Mavericks, and Rebels, who created the greatest medical breakthroughs of our lives. Part of the reason I, of course, was fascinated by it is I lived through it, knowing Paul Zoll and my Boston career as Dr. Forrester did, and then, of course, the greats from the Cleveland Clinic. Dr. Forrester, thanks for coming on, and I've got to thank you for America for writing this book, especially for me, for making my week reading this book just wonderful.
Well, thank you, Dr. Mike, and it's a pleasure to be on with you. And it is a fascinating story, isn't it? I mean, if it was fiction, question. It would be fascinating. And I wrote it really because of the unbelievable cast of characters, both patients and doctors that I met during this period. And I hope that it'll be a value to the friends, families, or people themselves who have heart disease.
Well, let's go through some of these characters, and I'm going to go through some of them I met, but one of them, you say it started really with, and I love the story of Willie that you have in the prologue, but it started with another, if you will, person, Dr. Harkin in Boston and from Boston. And tell me, so I've always thought that wars create great advances in medicine, and we're seeing that now with battlefield change in battlefield injuries from Iraq, but yes, how we have managed them and all the prostheses that go with them. But let's talk about how World War II changed cardiac care.
Well, Mike, it was the birth of cardiac surgery, strangely enough. And it happened because Dwight Harkin, who was a young Harvard surgeon, very little experience, was sent to London Battlefield Hospital. And there, in addition to the bombs from above and the fires in the streets, he confronted for the first time shrapnel sticking out of the hearts of young soldiers. Imagine yourself in that situation. If you leave it in, the patient's going to get a heart infection, and there was no penicillin at that time, so they would most surely die. But if you put a clamp on it and yanked it out, the patient would bleed to death. And the teaching at that time was that a surgeon should never touch the heart because he could kill the patient in an instant. But Hart decided anyway, and he put a clamp on the shrapnel and poised to yank it out. Imagine yourself about ready to do that. And he yanked it out, and a torrent of blood hit him in the face, and he stuck his finger in the hole, the old finger-in-the-dike strategy, and then furiously threw stitches in, and slowly around that hole he was able to staunch the blood flow. And the only thing that happened is, as he tried to remove his finger and withdraw it completely, he found he had sutured his glove to the to the patient's heart. But that patient survived, as did 15 others that he treated the same way, and that was the birth of cardiac surgery.
Now, at the same time, there was a guy named Paul Zoll, who was a cardiologist from Boston, who was involved in that type of thing. What happened there?
Well, Paul Zoll was the cardiologist. Of course, as you and I know, there's cardiac surgeons and cardiologists. Cardiac surgeons do the surgery. Cardiologists take care of heart attacks and so forth, the arrhythmias. Well, Paul Zoll was assigned to that same hospital, and he was in the operating room with Dwight Harkin and ultimately became a co-author on the first manuscript that was published about their experience. The reason that it's so fascinating, Mike, is that what happened was that Paul Zoll, who was, I gather, one of your mentors back in years past, became the inventor of the pacemaker.
And at least the way Paul told it to me, so Paul was one of my mentors at Beth Israel Hospital, and we had, at that time, Zoll defibrillators and Zoll pacemakers. He had started a company subsequent to that. Mm-hmm. But in that era, he shuffled his feet. And his shuffling his feet, he said, generated a spark from his finger that he could actually see went to the heart when, in fact, Harkin asked him to hold the finger in the dike on another patient. That heart was lifeless at the time. It wasn't beating. And I don't know whether this story is correspondence with one of yours or whether it's just something Paul Zoll told us as a fictional story. Mm-hmm. But anyway, the spark went from his finger to the heart as he was putting his finger in it to hold the finger in the dike, as you said it, with another patient, and lo and behold, it jumped to the metal object, the shrapnel, and it triggered that other heart to start beating. So it was a, if you will, a pacemaker, a rhythm that it gave the pacemaker on the heart, and that patient came back and lived, and that Paul Zoll told us was his genesis of how he invented the pacemaker.
Well, there's a fascinating additional part to that, and that is that the first pacemaker that he developed, of course, was this bulky, huge device, probably the size of a small television set, and he wheeled it up to his to the patient's bedside. The patient was dying of heart block, a heart rate of about 30, and he attached the his system to the patient, not knowing whether it would have no effect, kill the patient, or cause the patient to survive, and indeed the patient survived. But then what happened was that they couldn't...
By the way, I've got to tell you, I've got to just add to that, since it'll add to the book someday, is in fact he still, whenever he went on rounds, he would bring his pacemaker and his defibrillator with him to do just that, because he believed they had better electrical connections than the other ones available at the time.
Well, he was an interesting character on his own, wasn't he? He was a person who, he was short, kind of big ears, and suffered no fools. He was a Harvard intellectual through and through.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, what happened was that they couldn't disconnect the patient, so now they had a patient there in the hospital for 5 days, and just pacing away, and how would they ever get the patient to leave the hospital? And his residents started to say, you know, maybe you defied the will of God here. And as it turns out, one of his next patients, fortunately that patient did finally come off the pacemaker, and then he had another one who was a Monsignor in the Catholic diocese there, and subsequently in the Pilot, which is the newspaper of the Catholic diocese, was an article that said perhaps we should not be critical of this young doctor because the ways of God work in mysterious ways. And so he was let off from interfering with the will of God.
Now, when we've been talking with Dr. James Forster, F-O-R-E-S-T-E-R, as you can tell, I'm fascinated. This is a wonderful read, just a great read. The Misfits, Maverick, and Rebels, who created the greatest medical breakthrough of our lives, called The Heart Healers, by Dr. Forster, put out by St. Martin's Press, an outstanding press, The Heart Healers. We'll be right back after the messages you have to hear, but come back, because I'm going to talk to him about the Cleveland Clinic's own contributions, Mason Soans and Renee Favolaro, and how they actually helped change things too. And then we'll get to yours if you want. Call us, 844-305-7800. We'll be right back on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. This is a great book. Order it at Amazon, The Heart Healers.
Do you have a great idea for a radio show but have no idea where to start? Or have you been hosting a podcast for a while and want to take it to the next level? If so, you need the Gab Radio Network. To host a show on the Gab Radio Network, all you need is your voice, and we'll handle the rest, from technical engineering to full-service audio production and much more. Every show on the Gab Radio Network can be heard on our station on the TuneIn Radio app. Plus, we put all of our shows on our satellite, which is accessed by over 5,500 stations. And here's the best part. You can host from anywhere you want. There are many means to connect to the Gab Radio Network remotely, and our staff of highly trained engineers and producers will make you sound like you're right here in studio. So, if you want to be on the Gab Radio Network, the same network that hosts the Small Business Advocate, Radio MD, and The Federalist, send an email right now to sales@gabradionetwork.com. That's sales@gabradionetwork.com.
Over 30 years ago, R.W. and Margaret Garcia set out to make the best-tasting, healthy tortilla chip in the world. They invested every dime they had and started selling chips to retailers out of their family van. Today, R.W. Garcia products are sold around the world. Their products use only the highest quality, premium ingredients, are verified non-GMO, certified gluten-free, and contain no additives or preservatives. Try their three-seed kale, sweet potato, or harvest crackers, or go for their crunchy, tasty mixed bags of blue, yellow, and red tortilla chips. And for sure, every family must have one of their big bags of blue or yellow corn tortilla chips for healthy snacking and parties. Without question, R.W. Garcia is changing the way people snack with their simple philosophy. Great tasting can be good for you. Go to rwgarcia.com to find out where their products are sold in your area. R.W. Garcia, the best tasting healthy tortilla chip in the world.
I'm a paramedic, and it may sound silly, but a lot of people are afraid to call me when they're experiencing chest pain, or to call 911 if they're with someone experiencing chest pain. You know why? Because they think it would be embarrassing if it were a false alarm. Instead, people risk permanent damage or death because they're afraid they might get a lecture. That's ridiculous. So if you have an uncomfortable pressure, fullness, squeezing, or pain in the center of the chest that lasts more than a few minutes, call me. If you have a pain that spreads to the shoulders, neck, or arms, call me. If you have any discomfort in your chest with lightheadedness, fainting, sweating, nausea, or shortness of breath, call me. If you have any of these symptoms or are with someone who does, dial 911 right away. And if it is a false alarm, I'm not going to give you a lecture. I'll be happy to see you. I would much rather treat someone who isn't having a heart attack than to try to save someone who is. To learn more about heart attack warning signs, call the American Heart Association at 1-800-AHA-USA-1 or visit us on the web at AmericanHeart.org.
Only half of adults in the U.S. get the 2.5 hours per week of aerobic physical activity recommended for health benefits. Walkers are more likely to get the recommended amount. More adults are walking, but better spaces and more places are still needed. Communities can promote walking when they create long-range plans, such as master plans, and design safe streets for walkers. Communities can also ensure sidewalks and paths are in good repair and have easy-to-read signs. Employers can create walking programs, encourage walking breaks and meetings, and identify nearby paths or routes. Increase your physical activity by starting a walking group. Participate in local planning for walking paths and new sidewalks, or work with parents and schools to encourage walking to school where it's safe. For more information, visit www.cdc.gov/vital signs.
There's more of You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
Presented by the Radio MD Network.
Here's Dr. Michael Roizen.
And this is Dr. Mike. You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. I'm interviewing one of the greats in cardiology, James Forrester, who's written, not only is he great, but the book he wrote, The Heart Healers, is a great book. It's available, of course, on Amazon. It's from St. Martin's Press. And I would guess there's an ebook about it, but I love reading the hard copy. And I'm going to ask him about something that's always fascinated me, because Mason Soans and Rene Favolaro both came from the Cleveland Clinic. I was told they fought like cats and dogs. They were here before my time. So hopefully we're going to get the real story from Dr. Forrester in the book. And by the way, there's great chapters of this in the book, so I know something that we will get. We'll hear about these rebels, I guess you call them mavericks, rebels, and basically they're mischief makers,
yeah,
but who change medicine. Dr. Forrester, tell us about Mason Soans.
Well, I will tell you the truth about Mason Soans. He was a one of, back in those days, they had a, Reader's Digest had a feature they called the most unforgettable character I ever met, and this would be, if they'd asked me to write, I would have written about Mason Soans. He was a character. He drank like a sailor. He cursed like one. He was unpretentious. He was loved, shocking people, and he was also a person who, as it turned out, challenged conventional wisdom, although it came about through serendipity. Mason Soans was the guy who invented selective coronary angiography, one of the breakthroughs in all of cardiology. And here's how it came about. he was in the catheterization laboratory, and at that time it was thought that you could not put a catheter into the coronary artery because you'd kill the patient because you'd obstruct blood flow. And so he was injecting contrast X-ray dye into the aorta so that we could so that he could see the aorta because the aorta was diseased. And just as he pressed on the power injector of this contrast material, the catheter flipped like a garden hose directly into the coronary artery, and he injected a huge amount of contrast material into the coronary. So he saw, he stood there transfixed, thinking that he had killed the patient, and indeed the heart stopped, and then slowly it started beating again. And so what he realized, when he looked, he saw that he had perfectly imaged the coronary artery. And instead of cursing or thanking the gods for his good fortune of the patient surviving, he strode back to his office and bellowed at the top of his lungs, "I just revolutionized cardiology." And legend has it that his long-suffering secretary, Elaine Clayton, looked up and said, "Again?" But he did revolutionize cardiology because he then developed the whole technique of coronary angiography. And it is the basis of our management of coronary disease today.
And it actually is one of the things that put the Cleveland Clinic on the map, because
Absolutely.
It was then able to develop. And it coupled that, Mason Soans, was coupled with someone quite different, Rene Favolaro. Talk about Rene.
Yeah. Well, Rene was another character, really. He was the person, Michael, that I would say I most admired in my entire time in cardiology. He was a wonderfully principled, an idealist in many ways. He wanted to treat the poor the same as he treated the wealthy. And he was first in his class in Buenos Aires, and then condemned to a rural surgical practice because he had challenged the Argentinian regime at that time, the Peronistas. And he throughout his life, he up until his late 30s, he always wanted to do something more than that. So he left his practice in Brazil and came to the United States with limited language skills and no money, and was taken in by Don Effler, who was then the head of cardiac surgery, as a laboratory technician. And he was so skilled in the laboratory technician doing the heart surgeries they did in the animal lab that Effler offered him a cardiology fellowship. And he began then to work with Mason Soans.
By the way, you couldn't do this really easily now. The rules against it are tough now, regulation on what you can do with people and how you can get them to practice. Mm-hmm. But in the day, this was in the late 60s, you could do this.
That's exactly right. Everything has changed. So
well, you point that out beautifully in the book, by the way.
Uh-huh. Well, thank you, Michael. And so he, in 1967, he finally figured out a way to bypass the obstructions in the coronary artery that were causing the chest pain on exertion, angina. And Soans then proved that there was a torrent of blood going down that bypass graft, which he had used to treat the patient. It was the beginning of coronary artery bypass surgery. And in the next 3 years, he did 1,000 surgeries with a very low mortality. And he basically created a whole new field. First, Soans creating coronary angiography, and then Favolaro, who created surgery. They did scrap all the time, but they also considered themselves brothers. And Soans died of, being a maverick, of course, he smoked in the cath lab, and he had a sterile hemostat so that he could take a puff in between injections of contrast material. Can you imagine that today? You'd be executed. But he died of lung cancer, and Favolaro came back to be with him in the months just prior to his death.
So Favolaro, in fact, literally revolutionized the field could have been one of the wealthiest surgeons in the United States, was doing great work at the Cleveland Clinic, treating everybody, but had this belief he wanted to go back to Argentina and serve everyone. So what happened to him?
Well, this is the idealism of Rene Favaloro. He went back and wanted to set up something just like the Cleveland Clinic. And because he was now famous, he could do that. And he raised money to create the Foundation Favaloro. And it fell into trouble during Argentina's economic collapse. He asked for help. He didn't get it. And on a Sunday morning, he walked in and symbolically into his bathroom and symbolically shot himself through the chest. And that was the end.
So again, it was his attempt. And this is what you point out so well in this book, is it takes people who are a little crazy, a little devoted, and really, really innovative, and who can see unbelievable things in accidents that really makes differences. This is a great book, The Heart Healers. You want to read this because we're going to go through some dramatic changes, and you'll see how they're made in the next 10 years. James Forster, thank you very much. This is a book everyone should read just for the fun of reading it, The Heart Healers. We'll be right back with the second hour in a few minutes.